Chapter 32. Sealed to the Flame. Elida Doavrinia Royhan sat regally in the Ammerlin seat, the tall vine-carved chair painted now in only 6 colors instead of 7, a 6-striped stole on her shoulders, and ran her gaze around the circular hall of the tower. The sitter's painted chairs had been rearranged along the stair-fronted dais that encircled the chamber beneath the great dome, spaced out to account for only 6 ajahs instead of 7 now, and 18 sitters stood obediently. Young Althor knelt quietly beside the Ammerlin seat. He would not speak unless given leave, which he would not receive today. Today he was merely another symbol of her power, and the 12 most favored sitters glowed with the link that she herself controlled to keep him safe. "The greater consensus is achieved, Mother," Alviarin said meekly at her shoulder, bowing humbly against the flame-topped staff. Down on the floor below the dais, Shiriam screamed wildly and had to be restrained by the tower guard at her side. The red sister shielding her sneered in contempt. Romanda and Lelaine clung to a cold outward dignity, but most of the others shielded and guarded on the floor wept quietly, perhaps in relief that only 4 women had been given the ultimate penalty, perhaps in fear of what else was to come. The most ashen faces belonged to the 3 who had dared sit in a rebel hall for the now dissolved blue. Every rebel had been cast out from her Aja until Elida granted permission to request reacceptance. But the one-time blues knew they confronted difficult years working their way into her good graces, years before they would be allowed to enter any Aja at all. Until then, they lay in the palm of her hand. She stood, and it seemed the one power flowing through her from the circle was a manifestation of her power. "The hall concurs with the will of the Ammerlin seat. Let Romanda be the first to be birched." Romanda's head jerked. Let her see how much dignity she could retain until her stilling. Elida gestured curtly. "Take the prisoners away, and bring in the first of the poor deluded sisters who followed them. I will accept their submission." There was a cry among the prisoners, and one tore free from the guard, gripping her arm. Egwene Alvear threw herself onto the steps at Elida's feet, hands outstretched, tears streaming down her cheeks. "Forgive me, Mother," the girl wept. "I repent. I will submit. I do submit. Please, do not still me." Brokenly, she sagged, face down, shoulders shaking with sobs. "Please, Mother. I repent. I do." "The Ammerlin seat can show mercy," Elida said exultantly. The White Tower had to lose Lelaine and Romanda and Shiriam as examples, but she could keep this girl's strength. She was the White Tower. "Egwene Alvear, you have rebelled against your Ammerlin, but I will show mercy. You will be dressed in novice white again, until I myself judge you ready to be raised further. But this very day you shall be the first to take a 4th oath on the oath rod of fealty and obedience to the Ammerlin seat." The prisoners began falling on their knees, crying out to be allowed to take that oath, to prove their true submission. Lelaine was one of the first, and neither Romanda nor Shiriam the last. Egwene crawled up the steps to kiss the hem of Elida's dress. "I yield myself to your will, Mother," she murmured through her tears. "Thank you. Oh, thank you." Alviarin seized Elida's shoulder, shook her. "Wake up, you fool woman," she growled. Elida's eyes popped open to the dim light of a single lamp held by Alviarin, bending over her bed with a hand on her shoulder. Still only half awake, she mumbled, "What did you say?" "I said please wake up, Mother," Alviarin replied coolly. "Kovarla Baldin has returned from Kyrian." Elida shook her head, trying to clear away the tag end of the dream. "So soon? I did not expect them for another week at least. Kovarla, you say? Where is Galina?" Foolish questions. Alviarin would not know what she meant. But in that cool, crystalline tone, the woman said, "She believes Galina dead or a prisoner. I fear the news is not good." What Alviarin should or should not know rushed out of Elida's head. "Tell me," she demanded, throwing off the silk sheet. But as she rose and belted a silk robe over her nightdress, she heard only snatches. A battle. Hordes of Aiel women channeling. Althor gone. Disaster. Distractedly, she noticed that Alviarin was neatly garbed in a silver-embroidered white dress, with the keeper's stole around her neck. The woman had waited till she clothed herself to bring her this. The case clock in her study softly chimed second low as she entered the sitting room. The small hours of the morning, the worst time to receive dire news. Kovarla rose hastily from one of the red cushioned armchairs, her implacable face sagging with weariness and worry, and knelt to kiss Elida's ring. Her dark riding dress still bore the dust of travel, and her pale hair needed a brush, but she had donned the shawl she had worn as long as Elida had been alive. Elida barely waited for the woman's lips to touch the great serpent before pulling her hand away. "Why were you sent?" she said curtly. Snatching up her knitting from where she had left it in a chair, she sat and began to work the long ivory needles. Knitting served many of the same purposes as fondling her carved ivory miniatures, and she surely needed soothing now. Knitting helped her think, too. She had to think. "Where is Katerina?" If Galena was dead, Katerina should have taken charge ahead of Coiran. Elida had made it clear that once Althor was taken, the Red Aja was in charge. Kovarla stood slowly, as if uncertain she should. Her hands tightened on the red-fringed shawl looped over her arms. "Katerina is among the missing, Mother. I stand highest among those who—" Her words trailed off, as Elida stared at her, fingers frozen in the act of passing wool over one of the needles. Kovarla swallowed and shifted her feet. "How many, daughter?" Elida asked finally. She could not believe her voice was so calm. "I cannot say how many escaped, Mother," Kovarla said hesitantly. "We dared not wait to make a thorough search, and—"
"How many?" Elida shouted.
With a shudder she made herself concentrate on her knitting. Giving way to anger was weakness. Loop the yarn, pull through, and push down. Soothing motions.
I brought 11 other sisters with me, Mother."
The woman paused, breathing hard, and then, when Elida said nothing, rushed on.
"Others may be making their way back, Mother. Gawain refused to wait longer, and we dared not remain without him and his younglings, not with so many Aiel about, and the—"
Elida did not hear. 12 returned. Had any more escaped, they would have sped back to Tar Valon, would have been here as soon as Kovarla, surely. Even if one or two were injured, traveling slowly. 12 out of 39. The tower had not suffered a disaster of this magnitude even during the Trolloc Wars.
"These Aiel wilders must be taught a lesson," she said, trampling over whatever Kovarla was babbling. Galena had thought she could use Aiel to divert Aiel. What a fool the woman had been. "We will rescue the sisters they hold prisoner and teach them what it means to defy Aes Sedai. And we will take Althor again." She would not let him get away, not if she had to personally lead the entire White Tower to take him. The foretelling had been certain. She would triumph.
Casting an uneasy glance at Alviarin, Kovarla shifted her feet again.
"Mother, those men—"
"I think—" "Do not think," Elida snapped.
Her hands clasped the knitting needles convulsively, and she leaned forward so fiercely that Kovarla actually raised a hand, as though to fend off an attack. Alviarin's presence had slipped from Elida's mind. Well, the woman knew what she knew now. That could be dealt with later. "You have maintained secrecy, Kovarla? Aside from informing the keeper?"
"Oh, yes, Mother," Kovarla said hastily. Her head bobbed with eagerness, glad that she had done something right. "I entered the city alone and hid my face until I reached Alviarin. Gawain meant to accompany me, but the bridge guards refused to let any member of the younglings pass."
"Forget Gawain Trakand," Elida ordered sourly.
That young man remained alive to trouble her plans, it seemed. If Galena did turn out to be alive still, she would pay for failing in that, on top of letting Althor escape.
You will leave the city as circumspectly as you entered, daughter, and keep yourself and the others well hidden in one of the villages beyond the bridge towns until I send for you. Dorlan will do nicely. They would have to sleep in barns in that tiny hamlet which had no inn. The least their bungling deserved. Go, now, and pray that someone above you does arrive soon. The hall will demand amends for this unparalleled catastrophe, and at the moment it seems you stand highest among those at fault. Go! Kovarla's face went white. She tottered so, making her curtsy to leave. Elida thought she might fall. Bunglers! She was surrounded by fools, traitors, and bunglers! As soon as Elida heard the outer door close, she hurled down her knitting and sprang to her feet, rounding on Alviarin. Why have I not heard of this before? If Althor escaped, what was it you said, 7 days ago? If he escaped 7 days ago, someone's eyes and ears must have seen him. Why was I not informed?
I can only pass on to you what the Ajahs passed to me, mother. Alviarin adjusted her stole calmly, not a whit ruffled. Do you really mean to court a third debacle by attempting to rescue the captives?
Elida sniffed dismissively. Do you really believe Wilders can stand before Aes Sedai? Galena let herself be surprised. She must have.
She frowned. What do you mean, a third debacle?
You didn't listen, mother.
Shockingly, Alviarin sat without being given permission, crossing her knees and serenely arranging her skirts. Kovarla thought they might have held out against the Wilders, though I believe she is nowhere near as certain as she tried to pretend, but the men were another matter. Several hundred of them in black coats, all channeling. She was very certain of that, and so were the others, apparently. Living weapons, she called them. I think she nearly soiled herself just remembering.
Elida stood as if pole-axed. Several hundred? Impossible. There can't be more than...
She walked to a table that seemed all ivory and gilt, and poured herself a goblet of wine punch. The lip of the crystal pitcher rattled against the crystal goblet, and almost as much punch went onto the golden tray.
Since Althor can travel, Alviarin said suddenly, it seems logical at least that some of these men can too. Kovarla is quite sure that was how they arrived. I suppose he is rather upset at his treatment. Kovarla seemed somewhat uneasy about it. She implied that a number of the sisters were. He might feel he owes you something. It would not be pleasant to have those men suddenly stepping out of thin air right here in the tower, would it?
Elida practically tossed the punch down her throat. Galena had been instructed to begin making Althor supple. If he came for revenge, if there really were hundreds of men who could channel, or even 100, she had to think.
Of course, if they were coming, I believe they would have by now. They would not have wasted surprise. Perhaps even Althor doesn't wish to confront the full tower. I suppose they have all returned to Camelin, to their black tower. Which means, I fear, that Tovain has a most unpleasant shock awaiting her.
"Pen an order for her to return immediately," Elida said hoarsely. The punch did not seem to help. She turned and gave a start to find Alviarin right in front of her. Maybe there were not even 100. Not even 100? At sunset, 10 would have seemed madness. But she could not take the chance. "Write it out yourself, Alviarin. Now, right now."
"And how is it to be gotten to her?"
Alviarin tilted her head, icily curious. For some reason she wore a faint smile. "None of us can travel. The ships will put Tovain and her party ashore in Andor any day now, if they have not already. You told her to divide into small groups and avoid villages so as to give no warning."
"No, Elida. I am afraid Tovain will regather her forces near Camelin and attack the Black Tower without any word from us reaching her."
Elida gasped. The woman had just called her by name, and before she could begin to splutter with outrage, worse came.
"I think you are in great trouble, Elida."
Cold eyes stared into Elida's, and cold words slid smoothly from Alviarin's smiling lips. "Sooner or later the hall will learn of the disaster with Althor.
Galena might have satisfied the hall, possibly, but I doubt Kovarla will. They will want someone higher to pay. And sooner or later we will all learn Tovain's fate. It will be difficult to keep this on your shoulders, then. Casually she adjusted the Amarlin's stole around Elida's neck. In fact, it will be impossible if they learn any time soon. You will be stilled, made an example, the way you wanted to make Swan Sanche. But there might be time to recover if you listen to your keeper. You must take good advice. Elida's tongue felt frozen. The threat could not have been clearer. What you have heard tonight is sealed to the flame, she said thickly, but she knew that the words were useless before they were out of her mouth. If you mean to reject my advice. Alviarin paused, then began to turn away. Wait! Elida pulled down the hand she had stretched out unaware. Stripped of the stole, stilled. Even after that, they would make her howl. What? She had to stop and swallow. What advice does my keeper offer? There had to be some way to stop this. Sighing, Alviarin came close again. Closer, in fact. Much too near for anyone to stand to the Amarlin, their skirts almost touching. First, I fear you must abandon Tovain to whatever comes, for the moment at least. And also Galena and whoever else was taken prisoner, whether by the Aiel or the Ashaman. Any attempted rescue now must mean discovery. Elida nodded slowly. Yes, I can see that. She could not take her horrified eyes away from the other woman's demanding gaze. There had to be a way. This could not be happening. And I think it is time to reconsider your decision about the tower guard. Don't you really think the guard should be increased after all? I can see my way clear to do that. Light! She had to think! So good, Alviarin murmured, and Elida flushed with helpless rage. Tomorrow you will personally search Josane's rooms and Adalorna's. Why under the light would I... The woman tugged her striped stole again, roughly this time, almost as if to yank it off or saw through her neck with it. It seems that Josane found an Angreal some years before and never turned it in. Adalorna did worse, I fear. She removed an Angreal from one of the storerooms without permission. When you have found them, you will announce their punishment immediately. Something quite stiff. And at the same time you will hold up Dorais, Kiyoshi, and Ferelian as models of preserving the law. You will give each a present. A fine new horse will do. Elida wondered whether her eyes were going to pop right out of her face. Why? From time to time a sister kept an Angreal to herself in defiance of the law, but the penance was seldom more than a stern slap on the knuckles. Every sister knew the temptation. And the rest... The effect was obvious. Everyone would believe Dorais and Kiyoshi and Ferelian had exposed the other two. Josane and Adalorna were green, the others brown, gray, and yellow, respectively. The green Aja would be furious. They might even try to get back at the others, which would incite those Ajas, and... Why do you want to do this, Alviarin? Elida, it should be enough for you that it is my advice. Mocking honeyed ice suddenly turned to cold iron. I want to hear you say that you will do as you are told. There's no point in me working to keep the stole on your neck otherwise. Say it. Elida tried to look away. Oh, light, she had to think. Her belly was clenched in a knot. I will do as I am told. Alviarin smiled that chilly smile. You see... That did not hurt very much. Suddenly she stepped back, spreading her skirts in a moderate curtsy. With your permission, I will withdraw and let you find some sleep in what remains of the night. You have an early morning ahead, with orders to issue for High Captain Chubain and apartments to search. We have to decide when to let the tower know about the Ashaman, too. Her tone made it clear that she would decide. And perhaps we should begin planning our next move against Althor. It is about time the tower stood openly and called him to heel, don't you think? Think well. I give you good night, Elida. Dazed, wanting to sick up, Elida watched her go.
Stand openly? That would invite attack by these... What had the woman called them? These Ashaman. This could not be happening to her. Not to her. Before she realized what she was doing, she hurled the goblet across the room to shatter against a tapestry of flowers. Seizing the pitcher with both hands, she raised it overhead with a shriek of fury and flung that, too, in a spray of punch. The foretelling had been so certain. She would... Abruptly she stopped, frowning at the tiny shards of crystals clinging to the tapestry, the larger pieces scattered across the floor. The foretelling... Surely that had spoken of her triumph. Her triumph. Alviarin might have her minor victory, but the future belonged to Elida, as long as Alviarin could be gotten rid of. But it had to be done quietly, in some way so that even the hall would want silence, a way that would not point to Elida until it was too late, should Alviarin's sails gain wind. And suddenly the why came to her. Alviarin would not believe if she was told. No one would. Could Alviarin have seen her smile then, the woman's knees would have turned to jelly. Before she was done, Alviarin would envy Galena, alive or dead. Pausing in the hallway outside Elida's apartments, Alviarin studied her hands by the light of the stand lamps. They did not shake, which surprised her. She had expected the woman to fight harder, to resist longer, but it was begun and she had nothing to fear. Unless Elida learned that no fewer than 5 Ajahs had passed mention of Althor to her in the last few days. The deposing of Kola Vair had sent every Ajah's agent in Kyrian flying for a pen. No, if Elida did learn, she was safe enough, with the hold she had on the woman now, and with Messaana as patron. Elida, though, was finished, whether she realized or not. Even if the Ashaman failed to trumpet their crushing of Tovain's expedition, and she was sure they would crush it after what Messaana had told her of events of Dumai's Wells, all the eyes and ears in Camelin truly would gain wings once they learned. Lacking a miracle, such as the rebels appearing at the gates, Elida would suffer Swan Sanche's fate in a matter of weeks. In any case, it had begun— And if she wished she knew what it was, all she really had to do was obey, and watch, and learn. Perhaps she would wear the 7-striped stole herself when all was done. In the early morning sunlight streaming through her windows, Cian dipped the pen, but before she could write the next word, the door to the hall opened and the Amarlin swept in. Cian's thick black eyebrows rose. She would have expected anyone else at all before Elida, perhaps not excluding Randall Thor himself. Still, she set the pen down and rose smoothly, pulling down the silver-white sleeves she had pushed up to keep clear of the ink. She made the degree of curtsy proper to the Amarlin seat from a sitter in her own apartments. "I do hope you haven't found any white sisters hiding away Angreal, Mother." She did hope it quite fervently. Elida's descent on the greens a few hours ago, while most of them slept, was probably still producing wails and gnashing of teeth. In living memory, no one had been ordered birched for keeping back an Angreal, and now there were to be 2. The Amarlin must have been in one of her infamous cold furies. But if she had been then, no sign of it remained now. For a moment she regarded Cian silently, cool as a winter pond in her red-slashed silks. Then glided to the carved sideboard, where painted ivory miniatures of Cian's family stood, all years dead, but she still loved every one. "You did not stand to raise me Amarlin," Elida said, picking up the picture of Cian's father. She set it down hastily and took up her mother instead. Cian's eyebrows almost rose again, but she tried to make it a rule not to let herself be surprised more than once in a day. "I was not informed that the hall was sitting until afterward, Mother." After all these years, a touch of Lugard still clung to her voice. "Yes, yes." Abandoning the paintings, Elida glided to the fireplace. Cian had always had a fondness for cats, and carved wooden cats of every sort crowded the mantelpiece, some in amusing poses. The Amarlin frowned at the display,
then squeezed her eyes shut and gave her head a tiny shake. "But you remained," she said, turning quickly. "Every sitter who was not informed fled the tower and joined the rebels. Except you. Why?"
Cien spread her hands. "What else could I do but stay, Mother? The tower must be whole."
"Whoever the Amyrlin," she added to herself. "And what's wrong with my cats, if I may ask?" Not that she ever would aloud, of course. Sarela Bagand had been a fierce mistress of novices before being raised Amyrlin's seat, the very year she herself earned the shawl, and a fiercer Amyrlin than Elida could be with a sore tooth. Cien had had the proprieties driven into her too hard and deep for mere years to shift, or any dislike for the woman who wore the stole. One did not have to like an Amyrlin. "The tower must be whole," Elida agreed, rubbing her hands together. "It must be whole." Now why was she nervous? She had 99 kinds of temper, all hard as a knife and twice as sharp, but nervous the woman was not. "What I say to you now is sealed to the flame, Cien." Her mouth twisted wryly and she shrugged, giving her stole an irritable twitch. "If I knew how to make the seal stronger, I would," she said, dry as yesterday's dust. "I will hold your words in my heart, Mother. I command you to undertake an inquiry, and you must indeed hold it in your heart. The wrong ear hearing of it might mean death and disaster for the whole tower." Cien's eyebrows twitched. "Death and disaster for the whole tower?" "In my heart," she said again. "Will you sit yourself, Mother?" That was proper in her own apartments. "May I pour you some mint tea or plum punch?" Waving away the offer of refreshment, Elida took the most comfortable chair, carved by Cien's father as a gift when she received the shawl, though of course the cushions had been replaced many times since. The Amyrlin made the country chair seem a throne, all stiff back and iron countenance. Most ungraciously, she did not give permission for Cien to sit too, so Cien folded her hands and remained standing. "I have thought long and hard on treason, Cien, since my predecessor and her keeper were allowed to escape." "Helped to escape?" "Treason must have been at the core of that, and I fear only a sister or sisters could have effected it."
"That would certainly be a possibility, Mother."
Elida frowned at the interruption.
"We can never be sure who has the shadow of treason in her heart, Cien. Why, I suspect that someone arranged for an order of mine to be countermanded. And I have reason to believe that someone has communicated privately with Randall Thor. To what end, I cannot say, but that surely is treason against me and against the tower."
Cien waited for more, but the Amyrlin only looked back at her, slowly smoothing her red-slashed skirts. "Exactly what inquiry do you wish me to make, Mother?" she asked cautiously. Elida bounded to her feet. "I charge you to follow the stench of treason, no matter where it leads or how high, even to the keeper herself. Yes, even to her. What you find, whoever it leads to, you will bring before the Amyrlin seat alone, Cien. No one else must know. Do you understand me?"
"I understand your commands, Mother."
Which, she thought, once Elida had departed even more swiftly than she had come, was about all she did understand. In order to think, she took the chair the Amyrlin had vacated, fists pressed beneath her chin in just the way her father had always sat thinking. Everything fell to logic, eventually. She would not have stood against Swan Sanche had she proposed the girl as Amyrlin in the first place, but once it was done and all the forms were followed, however sparely, aiding her escape certainly had been treason, and deliberately countermanding an Amyrlin's order just as much. Probably communicating with Althor was, too. That depended on what was communicated, with what intent. Finding who had changed the Amyrlin's command would be difficult without knowing what command. At this late date, learning who might have helped Swan escape stood about as much chance of success as learning who might be writing to Althor. So many pigeons flew into and out of the tower cotes every day that at times the sky seemed to be raining feathers. If Elida knew more than she had said, she had certainly gone around the barn.
This all made very little sense. Treason ought to make Elida boil with rage, but she had not been angry. She had been nervous, and anxious to be gone, and secretive, as if she did not want to tell everything she knew or suspected, almost as though she was afraid to. What kind of treason would make Elida nervous or afraid? Death and disaster for the whole tower. Like the pieces of a blacksmith's puzzle, all fell into place, and Cian's eyebrows tried to climb onto her scalp. It fit. It all fit. She felt the blood draining from her face. Her hands and feet were suddenly icy. Sealed to the flame. She had said she would keep this in her heart, but everything had changed since she spoke those words. She only let herself be afraid when it was logical to be, and right then she was terrified. She could not face this alone. But who? Under the circumstances, who? This answer came much more easily. Gathering herself took a little time, but she hurried from her rooms and out of the white quarters, walking a good deal faster than she usually did. Servants scurried through the corridors as always, though she walked so quickly that she was past most before they could begin bow or curtsy, but there seemed fewer sisters about than the early hour could account for. Many fewer. Yet if most were staying close to their quarters for some reason, the few she saw made up for it in one way. Sisters swanned along the tapestry-hung hallways, faces all serenity, and their eyes seemed to have steam behind them. Here and there two or three women spoke together, with sharp eyes darting to see who might be listening. Always two or three of the same Aja. Even yesterday she was sure she had still seen women sharing friendship between Ajas. Whites were supposed to put emotion away entirely, but she had never seen the reason for blinding herself as some did. Suspicion made the air in the tower like hot jelly. Not a new thing, unfortunately. The Amarlin had begun it with her harsh measures, and the rumors about Loghain had only exacerbated the situation, but this morning seemed worse than ever. Talene Minley came around a corner ahead of her, her shawl not just across her shoulders, but spread down her arms as though to display the green fringe. For that matter, she realized that every green she had seen this morning wore her shawl. Talene, golden-haired and statuesque and lovely, had stood to depose Swan, but she had come to the tower while Cian was accepted, and that decision had not dented their long friendship. Talene had had reasons Cian accepted, if not agreed with. Today her friend stopped, watching her warily. So many sisters seemed to watch one another that way of late. Another time she would have stopped, but not with what made her head want to burst open like a spoiled melon. Talene was a friend, and she thought she could be sure of her, but thinking was not enough for this. Later, if possible, she would approach Talene. Hoping it would be possible, she hurried past with only a nod. In the red quarters, the mood was even worse, the air thicker. As with the other Ajas, there were many more rooms than there were sisters to fill them now. That had been so long before the first rebel fled. But the red was the largest of the Ajas, and sisters filled the levels still in use. Reds frequently wore their shawls when there was no need, but now every last woman sported her red fringe like a banner. Conversation stopped as Cian approached, and cold eyes followed her in a bubble of icy silence. She felt an invader deep in enemy country as she crossed those peculiar floor tiles, white with the teardrop flame of Tarvalin in red. But then any part of the tower might be enemy country. Looking another way, those scarlet flames might be taken for red dragon's fangs. She had never believed those irrational tales about the reds and false dragons, but why would none of them deny it? She had to ask directions. "I will not disturb her if she is busy," she said. "We were close friends once, and I would like us to be again. Now more than ever the Ajas cannot afford to drift apart." All true, though the Ajas seemed to be splitting apart rather than drifting, but the Domani woman listened with a face that could have been cast in copper. There were not many Domani reds, and those few usually meaner than snakes caught in a fence. "I will show you, sitter," the woman said at last, and not very respectfully. She led the way, then watched while Cien knocked on the door, as though she could not be trusted here alone. The door panels were carved with the flame, too, lacquered the color of fresh blood.
"Come," a brisk voice called from within.
Cien opened the door, hoping she was right.
"Cien," Pevara exclaimed cheerfully. "What brings you here this morning? Come, shut the door and sit."
It was as if all the years since they were novice and accepted together had melted away. Quite plump and not tall, in truth, for a Kandori she was short, Pevara was also quite pretty, with a merry twinkle in her dark eyes and a ready smile. It was sad that she had chosen red, no matter how good her reasons, because she still liked men. The red did attract women who were naturally suspicious of men, of course, but others chose it because the task of finding men who could channel was important. Whether they liked men or disliked them, or did not care one way or the other in the beginning, however, not many women could belong to the red for long without taking a jaundiced view of all men. Cien had reason to believe Pevara had served a penance shortly after attaining the shawl for saying that she wished she had a warder. Since reaching the safer heights of the hall, she had openly said warders would make the Red Aja's work easier. Not that that had any part in Cien trusting her. Of all the sisters in the tower, though, Pevara was the one she was sure she could trust with this.
"I cannot tell you how happy I am to see you," Pevara said once they were ensconced in armchairs, carved in the spirals popular in Kandor 100 years ago. "'With delicate butterfly-painted cups of blueberry tea in hand. "'I have often thought how I should go to you, "'but I admit to fearing what you would say "'after I gave you the cut direct so many years ago. "'Sworn on the blade, Cien, I'd not have done it, "'except Tessian Jorhald practically had me by the scruff of my neck, "'and I was too new to the shawl to have much backbone yet. "'Can you forgive me?'
"'Of course I can,' Cien replied. "'I understood.'
The Red firmly discouraged friendships outside the Aja. Quite firmly and quite efficiently.
We cannot go against our Ajas when we are young, and later it seems impossible to retrace our steps. 1,000 times I've remembered us whispering together after last. Oh, and the pranks! Do you recall when we dusted Sarancha's shift with powdered itch oak? But I'm ashamed to say it took being terrified out of my wits to stir my feet. I do want us to be friends again, but I need your help, too. You are the only one I'm sure I can trust.
Sarancha was a prig then and still is, Pevara laughed. The Grey is a good place for her. But I can't believe you terrified at anything. Why, you never decided it was logical to be afraid until we were back in our beds. Short of a promise to stand in the hall without knowing what for, whatever help I can give is yours, Cien. What do you need?
Brought to the point, Cien hesitated, sipping her tea. Not that she had any doubts about Pevara, but pushing the words out of her mouth was difficult.
"The Amarlin came to see me this morning," she said finally. "She instructed me to make an inquiry, sealed to the flame."
Pevara frowned slightly, but she did not say that in that case Cien should not be speaking of it. Cien might have planned how to carry out most of their pranks as girls, but Pevara had been the one with the audacity to think most of them up, and she had provided most of the nerve to go through with them.
She was very circumspect, but after a little thought it was clear to me what she wanted. I am to hunt out...
At the last, courage failed her tongue.
Dark friends in the tower.
Pevara's eyes, as dark as her own were blue, became stone and swept the mantle above her fireplace, where miniatures of her own family made a precise line. They had all died while she was a novice. Parents, brothers and sisters, aunts, uncles and all, murdered in a quickly suppressed uprising of dark friends, who had become convinced the Dark One was about to break free. That was why Cien had been sure she could trust her. That was why Pevara had chosen red, though Cien still thought she could have done as well and been happier as a green, because she believed a red-hunting man who could channel had the best chance of finding dark friends. She had been very good at it. That plump exterior covered a core of steel. and she possessed the courage to say calmly what Ciane had been unable to bring herself to utter. "The Black Aja. Well, no wonder Elida would be circumspect. Pevara, I know she's always denied its existence harder than any three other sisters combined, but I'm certain sure that's what she meant, and if she is convinced..." Her friend waved her off. "You have no need to convince me, Ciane. I have been sure the Black Aja exists for..." Strangely, Pevara became hesitant, peering into her teacup like a fortune-teller at a fair. "What do you know of events right after the Aiel War?" "Two Amerlins dying suddenly in the space of 5 years," Ciane said carefully. She assumed the other woman meant events in the tower. Truth to tell, until being raised a sitter nearly 15 years ago, just a year after Pevara, she had not given much attention to anything outside the tower. And not that much inside, really. A great many sisters died in those years, as I recall. "Do you mean to say you think the Black Aja had a hand in that?" There, she had said it, and the name had not burned her tongue. "I don't know," Pevara said softly, shaking her head. "You've done well to wrap yourself deep in philosophy. There were things done then and sealed to the flame." She drew a troubled breath. Ciane did not press her. She herself had committed something akin to treason by breaking that same seal, and Pevara would have to decide on her own. "Looking at reports will be safer than asking questions with no idea who we're really asking. Logically, a black sister must be able to lie despite the oaths. Otherwise, the Black Aja would have been revealed long since." That name seemed to be coming more easily with use. "If any sister wrote that she did one thing when we can prove she did another, then we have found a dark friend." Pevara nodded. "Yes. Perhaps the Black Aja has no hand in the rebellion, but I cannot think they would let this turmoil pass without taking advantage. We must look closely at this last year, I think." To that, Ciane agreed reluctantly. There would be fewer pieces of paper to read and more questions to ask concerning recent months. Deciding who else to make part of the inquiry was even harder, especially after Pevara said, "You were very brave coming to me, Ciane. I've known dark friends to kill brothers, sisters, parents, to try hiding who they are and what they've done. I love you for it, but you were very brave indeed." Ciane shivered as if a goose had walked on her grave. Had she wanted to be brave, she would have chosen green. She almost wished Elida had gone to someone else. There was no turning back now, though.